So tonight we're starting our exploration of this book and the teachings within it. It's called In the Buddha's Words, an Anthology of Discourses from the Pali Canon. And the discourses are what you may have heard called the sutras or the suttas. Sutra is Sanskrit and sutta is Pali. Pali is a language that was used for texts at the time the Buddha's teachings were written down. And so it's not the language that the Buddha spoke, but it's in the same general area, linguistic area of the language that the Buddha probably spoke. They weren't written down for hundreds of years. And that's part of the challenge. So Bhikkhu Bodhi, who is an American monk, born in 1944, moved to Sri Lanka, was fully ordained as a Theravadan monk in 1973, and then spent nearly 30 years in Sri Lanka, and eventually became the head of the Buddhist Publication Society, and now is one of the foremost translators of the early Buddhist texts. And he realized that just translating them wasn't quite enough. That what he found was that the overall structure of the teachings is not evident in the way that the books were laid out. The teachings were primarily structured for oral learning, because at the time of the Buddha, that's how teaching was transmitted, was by oral learning, by remembering and memorizing and then repeating. And so the structure of the way that the suttas were organized was not chronological. You tend to want to start from A and go to Z. It's not chronological. It's not thematic, and there's no index, and quite frankly, the usefulness for our modern Western way of thinking really varies from one to another. So if you pick up one of the, and I didn't bring any of his volumes of his teachings, but they're like this, you know, in thickness, and if you just pick one of those up on page one and start reading it, it is not useful. It's just not going to get you anywhere. So what was really needed, in Bhikkhu Bodhi's opinion, was an organization of these teachings that would make them, first of all, more accessible for us, not being scholar monks, and secondly, that would teach us the overall structure of the teachings. And the purpose of all this is not for academic exercise or anything like that. It's probably best expressed by the Dalai Lama. His Holiness wrote the foreword to this book. And he says, "I offer my prayers that readers may find advice here and the inspiration to put it into practice that will enable them to develop inner peace, which I believe is essential for the creation of a happier and more peaceful world." So this is not an academic exercise. This is a way of taking the teachings into our daily life, which after all is what we try to do here at SIM, and to apply them. So what I'm going to do tonight is to kind of let you know our intention. Diane and Dennis and I decided that this would be a really helpful way of structuring the teachings. But it also contains, in a sense, all of the teachings. So it's a very loose structure. But those of you that decide to get the book and follow along with us, so to speak, will have a tool that you can then use in the future. And I'll explain some of the ways I use this book as we go through the structure of it. So the overall structure that Bhikkhu Bodhi envisioned and carried out was to organize the teachings from the sort of grossest and most mundane to the most refined and the most profound. So they're organized into 10 sections. And the other value about this is that the 10 sections each have, there's a general introduction to the whole thing, which is extremely useful. And then each of the 10 sections has an introduction by Bhikkhu Bodhi when he explains his thoughts on the theme of that section. And then within that, he actually tells you each of the selections that follows and puts it into context. So it's really useful. You can see how, why he chose each one that he chose, and then you can see how they relate to each other. So it's a very useful book. And how many of you already have this book? Fantastic. About half the group. And how many of you have it and have never read it? Yeah. Yeah. So that's how we're doing this. Yeah, the copies will come to me, and because I'm going to organize the order and the shipping and all that kind of stuff. And then the reason I have asked for your... Ruth's always really good at asking questions, and I would probably forget to answer, so thank you. On your handout at the bottom, there's a little thing to just let me know if you want to order this book, and it'll have your name, email, phone. So... once they come in, I'll let you know. I imagine that I'm not going to place the order till we get 20, because we need to get 20 to get this group rate of $11.37. Now, when I went online, I'm not a special anything, so when I looked at Amazon, it was $12. Yeah. So this is even cheaper than Amazon. This is a 40% group discount because we're a nonprofit. Diane gave me the name of someone that she knows at Wisdom Publications, and I wrote them, and they wrote back within like half an hour and said, we'll give you 40%. I've had people come up at the break and tell me that if you're an Amazon Prime member, you can get it for 10-something. So, you had $9.91. There you go. So, whatever. If you want to join in on the group order, $11.37. And we'll need 20 of those. So, the answer to your question is as soon as I get 20 pieces of paper or emails or phone calls, you can also just email me at rich@sactoinsight.org for those of you on the recording. You can email me rich@sactoinsight.org and say, I want the book, and I'll know what book you want. And if you want another book, you're going to get this book anyway.
What if you don't get 20?
Then we'll have to talk. If we don't get 20, we'll figure something out. And what I forgot to check, I know you're a great library user, is how many copies are in the Sacramento Library. So it might be, I forgot to look online. Or here, for that matter, in our lending. Are there a few here in the lending library? So I'm hearing that there are a few copies of it here in the Sacramento Dharma Center in the library.
Rich, if you don't get 20... just let me know how many you need. I'll get it on Amazon.
Yeah.
Send to you.
Okay. Thank you. We'll figure it out. Okay. So what I thought I would do tonight is tell you what this book has and what it does not have, and give you some suggestions of how we use it, and then maybe come up with some ideas of how we might use it going forward in the... And as my wife pointed out, when did going forward become the replacement for in the future? I have no idea. But it did. So, over the next few months, how we might use this. So, the book has a contents, and then it has a detailed contents. It has a general introduction, which is extremely useful. The general introduction has four sections. The first one is uncovering the structure of the teachings, which goes into detail in what I was just talking about, that the structure is not evident, but this is how Bhikkhu Bodhi sees the structure of the teachings and how we decided to organize it. The second one is called the origins of the Nikayas. So the suttas, rather than being organized in alphabetical order or in chronological order, are organized into collections called the Nikayas. And there are four main ones and then a fifth sort of miscellaneous one. So the Digha Nikaya is the long discourses. The Majjhima Nikaya is the middle length discourses. The Anguttara Nikaya is the, sometimes they're called the numerical discourses, and the Samyutta Nikaya are the what they call the connected discourses. Those are the collections that we have. Now, in the bigger picture, the teachings have been transmitted to us in three baskets. So sometimes it's called the Tipitaka, three baskets. And the first basket is this collection of the suttas. So in addition to those four major Nikayas, the fifth one is sort of a miscellaneous collection where the Dhammapada is, the Sutta Nipata, which, by the way, Bhikkhu Bodhi is working, or may have already finished it. That's going to be available in September. You can pre-order that. And Sutta Nipata is thought to be one of the earliest of the suttas collections. So really great stuff. There's some good translations already, but I'm really looking forward to his translation of the Sutta Nipata. So that's in that fifth Nikaya. So the first basket of the three baskets is the suttas, the discourses, the writing down by his disciples of the Buddha's teachings. Now, this is optimistically called in the Buddha's words. It's highly unlikely that any one of these is a direct quote from the Buddha. You've probably heard that at the first council, the monks got together and they asked Ananda, who was his attendant and his cousin, to recite the suttas. And he was there for all of them and he had this amazing memory. And so he recited all of the suttas that he had memorized. Legend is that it was every sutta that Buddha had ever given. But oral tradition being what it is, he probably didn't even want to speak them in the exact same words that the Buddha used. Because, you know, if you read them, there's this context placed around them, right? You know, thus have I heard. It was in, you know, Savatthi in the so-and-so month that this happened. You know, well, the Buddha didn't say that. That's Ananda telling the story, right? So, in the Buddha's words, as Tony Bernhardt says, it's a 2,500-year game of telephone. But this is, the Pali Canon is the earliest record that we have of what the Buddha may have said, or at least what his disciples decided that he said. Okay, so it's as good as it gets. So we have the suttas in that basket. In the second basket, we have the Vinaya, which is the rules for the monks and nuns. And there's some additional things in there besides the rules. There's some really nice stories in the some of the other books of the Vinaya that you may have heard and you won't be able to find in the suttas because they're actually in the Vinaya, some of the stories of some of the fantastic things the monks did and all of that. And then the other basket is the Abhidhamma, what we call the Buddhist psychology, what Bhikkhu Bodhi calls the Buddhist philosophy. And that was written down even later than the Vinaya and the suttas. And someone reminded me that Steve Armstrong, his correspondence course on the Abhidhamma is being offered right now through Spirit Rock. So you can find that at their website if you're interested in exploring that. It's definitely a territory you should explore with a guide. The Abhidhamma, you think this is difficult to read. The Abhidhamma, to read that, I don't know anybody that's read it cover to cover. I mean, even the scholars that I know, it's not something that you pick up and read cover to cover. It's quite detailed and quite refined and tough slogging. But with a guide like Steve, if you're interested in the Abhidhamma, that's worth checking out. Um, The third part of the general introduction is the Pali Canon, where Bhikkhu Bodhi goes into detail on kind of what I just got ahead of myself explaining. And then the last one is called A Note on Style. Now that sounds very innocuous, very understated, as Bhikkhu Bodhi always is. But he gets quite impassioned. Some of the most impassioned words in this whole thing are in this thing called The Note on Style. And I actually reread this part after I wrote my blurb for the E-News, in which I said, there's some repetition both within a sutta and in the thematic material repeated in various suttas. Some translations may have archaic language. The suttas are not in chronological order, etc. Here's what Bhikkhu Bodhi says. Readers of the Pali Suttas are often annoyed by the repetitiveness of the texts. It is difficult to tell how much of this stems from the Buddha himself, who as an itinerant preacher must have used repetition to reinforce his points, and how much is due to the compilers. It is obvious, however, that a high proportion of the repetitiveness derives from the process of oral transmission. To avoid excessive repetitiveness in the translation, I have had to make ample use of elisions. So that's when you do three dots, that tells you that there's some text missing between the text on the left side of the dots and the right side of the dots. In this respect, I follow the printed editions of the Pali texts, which are also highly abridged. But a translation intended for a contemporary reader requires still more compression if it is to avoid risking the reader's wrath. So now you know that why about a quarter of the people that actually have this book have never read it. Because even when it's shortened this much, you know, it can be tough going. And then being the balanced, always looking for the balance, he says, on the other hand, I have been keen to see that nothing essential to the original text, including the flavor, has been lost due to the abridgment. The ideals of considerateness to the reader and fidelity to the text sometimes make contrary demands on a translator. Okay, so those of you that have read his translations of the Majjhima or any of those Nikayas, they're not the same version in here. So just to know that, they're much easier to read in here than they are in the big fat Nikayas. So each section has an introduction, and just to give you a flavor of these, let me read you the section to one of my favorite sections, which is approaching the Dhamma. So this is how we come to the teachings and how we can benefit from them. One of the distinctive features of the Buddha's teaching is the respect it accords to direct experience. The texts of early Buddhism do not teach a secret doctrine, nor do they leave scope for anything like an esoteric path reserved for an elite of initiates and withheld from others. According to text 3.1, so this is the third section, and 3.1 is the first text in this section, and he does them in order. So if you're reading this introduction, this tells you where the first text lies. According to 3.1, secrecy in a religious teaching is the hallmark of wrong views and confused thinking. The teaching of the Buddha shines openly, as radiant and brilliant as the light of the sun and moon. Freedom from the cloak of secrecy is integral to a teaching that gives primacy to direct experience, inviting each individual to test its principles in the crucible of his or her own experience. In sharp contrast to revealed religion, the Buddha does not demand that we begin our spiritual quest by placing faith in doctrines that lie beyond the range of our immediate experience. Rather than ask us to wrestle with issues that, for us in our present condition, no amount of experience can decide, he instead asks us to consider a few simple questions pertaining to our immediate welfare and happiness, questions that we can answer on the basis of personal experience. So, first of all, the beauty of the writing, the clarity of the writing is amazing. And he's really framing here the way that these writings can be used. And so each of these sections has an introduction like this. It's really just amazing. I mean, you really could just read the introductory chapters without reading the suttas. I don't know why you do that, but you could, and you would really get a lot out of this book. So highly recommended from that point of view. So the 10 sections that he's divided them into, again, from the most coarse and the most obvious or mundane to the most refined and subtle, are the first is the human condition. And he's not talking about, when he's talking about the human condition, he's talking about without the teachings. This is what, basically, it's the truth of dukkha is what it is. It's the truth of suffering. He's talking about what human life is like without the benefit of having these teachings. And then the second is the bringer of light, which is the Buddha, and a little bit of biographical about the Buddha. Approaching the Dhamma was the section that I just talked about, well, how do we frame, what's the conceptual framework around these teachings? The happiness visible in this present life is advice for householders, really useful section. I think we did a whole series on it, and I've done several of the suttas from that when we were doing our series on suttas that speak to us. The way to a fortunate rebirth actually is way more than just fortunate rebirth. It's actually how do these teachings not just benefit our everyday life as the previous section, but how do these teachings lead us toward liberation? Deepening one's perspective on the world, right view. The path to liberation, mastering the mind, shining the light of wisdom, and the planes of realization. So, in a way, the suttas themselves aren't organized in order, but you can use this book to kind of jump around and find certain things that you want, but then you can also read it in order. And kind of progress with Bhikkhu Bodhi from the misery of dukkha to the liberation of Nibbana. The last section is about Nibbana. The other sections of this book are also quite useful. So he has it's highly notated. He's got a huge section of notes on each section at the back, and they're very useful. A lot of them he'll have the entire Pali text in Roman script, but he'll have the entire thing, and then he'll say why he translated it the way he did and what some of the alternate translations are. So that's pretty cool. He has a glossary. It's quite brief. I think the reason it's so brief, it's only about a page and a half, is that those are the Pali words that he doesn't like to translate, because the Pali contains so much more meaning than the English, that he doesn't like to translate them at all. But he gives a little sentence or two on each of these words and kind of explains what they are. He has a bibliography, both where he gets some suggested places where you can go for the original suttas in their full form, and also some secondary sources about writings about the suttas and about Buddhism. The index of subjects, which is really useful, and that's where the book itself is more useful than, say, just trying to go online and try to find suttas yourself. I mean, you can do a Google search on a certain subject, but these have been organized by somebody that's really thought about it. So the index of subjects is... like 6 pages long. And for example, you want contemplation of the body. So he's got you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 different references on contemplation of the body. And he has references both to the sutta and also to the introductory material that discusses that. And you'll recognize that by the Roman numerals that he uses for each introduction. So, good stuff. The index of subjects is in both English and Pali. So, it's in alphabetical order by English, I believe. I don't think you can look up the Pali. Let me check. Yonisu Manasikara. Yeah. So, if you wanted to look, I saw Yonisu Manasikara here somewhere. There we go. Yeah, careful. He calls it careful attention in English. But then the Pali is Yonisu Manasikara, so if you were interested in that, you'd heard that term, you could look it up here. So those are the subjects. He has an index of proper names. So if you've heard the name of, you know, a monk or nun or lay supporter, as long as they're in this book. He does not have every person. So I tried to look up Mahapajapati, and she wasn't in here. So, sorry. But everybody that's actually in here is in the index of proper names, as well as things like the Ganges and Isipatana and some place names. Oh, there's an index of similes, which is kind of fun. As you know, the Buddha often spoke in similes, and so you want the simile of the dart, of a man struck by a dart, right? Many of us know that one. Person who crosses the desert, the dewdrop on a blade of grass, the divine messengers, you know, the four heavenly messengers, a dog on a leash, didn't even know there was a sutta that used the simile of a dog on a leash. Let's see what it is. That sounds like fun. Oh, there's several similes in this sutta. Suppose, monks, a dog tied up on a leash was bound to a strong post or pillar. It would just keep on running and revolving around that same post or pillar. So, too, the uninstructed worldling, in other words, someone that doesn't practice, the uninstructed worldling regards form as self, feeling as self, so the five aggregates, right? Perception as self, volitional formations as self, consciousness as self. He just keeps running and revolving around form, feeling, perception, volitional formations around consciousness. As he keeps on running and revolving around them, he is not freed from form, not freed from feeling, not freed from perception, not freed from volitional formations, not freed from consciousness. He is not freed from birth, aging, and death, not freed from sorrows, lamentation, pain, dejection, and despair, not freed from suffering, I say. There you go. Assembly of a dog on a leash. The next section at the back here is index of selected Pali Sutta titles. So one thing this book does not do is have all of your favorite suttas. So, you know, I immediately went and looked for the Kalama Sutta. It's not in here. It doesn't fit the themes that he has chosen. The Satipatthana Sutta is here. And so, you know, it runs to a couple of pages. And then he has a little index of Pali terms discussed in the notes. He has a really interesting table where he takes all of those suttas that are in list form, and he lists them by source of which of the Nikayas it came out of, where it is in the Pali Text Society volume, which many of us probably don't own, where it is in this text, the title, he kind of gives a little summary title to it. So this first one, which is Digha Nikaya 5, he calls Bringing Tranquility to the Land, and then he gives a page reference. And then it looks like he tells where he discusses it in his introductions. So you've got a table that has all of that. for the Digha Nikaya Majjhima Samyutta Anguttara, and then from the last Nikaya, he's got some three suttas from the Udana, which include the blind man and the elephant, and then a few from the Itivuraka. So the other thing I've got on your little handout is that Wisdom Publications, since they're his publisher, have done a couple really nice interviews with Bhikkhu Bodhi. And so the first one is called Translating the Buddha. So you might listen to that. It was posted at the Wisdom podcast section of their website on October 5th, 2015. And it kind of gives his ideas on what it is to translate. And I believe in that one he also talks about his upcoming Sutta Nipata, which again isn't coming out till this fall. But I think he already knew that it was going to be done soon. And then the second one is on this other volume, The Buddha on Social Harmony. This is called The Buddha's Teachings on Social and Communal Harmony. It's structured in exactly the same way. It is also called an anthology of discourses from the Pali Canon. It's also introduced and edited by Bhikkhu Bodhi. And it has, like the other one, it has a foreword by the Dalai Lama. So the way this came about, and the reason I'm mentioning it in depth a little bit here, is that in addition to in the Buddha's words, I think I and probably Diane, at least, I haven't talked to Dennis yet about this, we'll be bringing this one in as well. Just because it expands on kind of social action, which Bhikkhu Bodhi has really gotten involved in recently, and is sort of mentioned in this other one, but isn't expanded on. So we'll probably be bringing this in once in a while as well. And it's really interesting how this book came about. So there's a Zen teacher from the Bay Area whose name, and please forgive me if I'm mispronouncing it, is Alan Sunaki. And he's doing a three-part series at SBMG. He's done two of them already. He's doing the third one a week from Sunday, on Sunday, June 25th. So he was in Burma, and he was really inspired by the Saffron Revolution, you know, basically the movement that the monks and nuns participated in that eventually led to the freeing of Aung San Suu Kyi. But he was also there when the violence broke out against the Muslims that was led by some Buddhist monks. So he was really troubled, he was both inspired and troubled by this idea of the teachings on communal and social harmony. So he thought about putting together a collection from the Pali Suttas and started looking around for someone that could do that. As he says, not being a scholar or a translator, he contacted several learned friends. It turns out that several years back, Bhikkhu Bodhi, one of the most respected and prolific interpreters of early Buddhism, had assembled such a collection as an addendum to a training curriculum for social harmony in Sri Lanka, organized by the Institute for the Study of Human Rights at Columbia University. So he came back, he asked Bhikkhu Bodhi to put it together in this book form, and Wisdom published it. So this just came out last year, and you might think of it as an addendum to this, you know, going into more depth on a single subject, which is the Buddha's teachings on social and communal harmony. So, you know, not asking you to buy that, but it's a really nice volume to have. You could use it in the same way. So the way I use these books, I seldom, I mean, other than the very first time I read it, the way I use it now is that when I want to, for example, come here and talk about a specific thing, you know, I'll go into the index, I'll look it up, I'll find out, I'll read Bhikkhu Bodhi's introduction, even if I disagree with him, which I might, and you might, it is a point of view, and it's a valuable point of view. So one of the things we wanted to make clear in launching this series is that there may be things in here that you do not agree with. That's fine. The reason I read that introduction by Bhikkhu Bodhi is that he does not expect you to believe something just because he translated it. The Buddha didn't expect us to believe it just because we respect the Buddha. He expects you to test it in your own experience. Bhikkhu Bodhi wouldn't expect anything different. So just because the Bhikkhu Bodhi translates it, or just because he says in the introduction that, oh, you can't be a Buddhist unless you believe blah, 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 we're not asking you to believe blah, blah, blah. He just told you in the general introduction that these teachings do not require you to believe anything to start on the path. What's required is for you to test everything in your own experience. So I'm warning you right now, there'll be things in here that you disagree with. We're not presenting this as this is what you have to believe. This is not a Bible. This is a way of studying the suttas on your own so that you can benefit from them without anybody in between you and the teachings. I mean, obviously, he's translated them. He's got a Western mind. There's a bias there. The English language has a built-in bias. So all of that is there. But this is one of the ways I'm recommending as the closest you can get to reading the suttas yourself and benefiting from them easily. So that's why we're recommending it. But just to know in advance, when I talk, I'm just offering my point of view. When Diane talks, she's just offering her point of view. When Dennis talks, he's just offering his point of view for you to try out in your own experience. One of the reasons we're doing this is to encourage you to cut out the middle person and go directly to the teachings yourselves and see what you can learn about them. So I think that's all I've got. Any questions, comments, confusions, experience with the volume that you've already had? Yes.
I have two questions.
Yeah.
When was the book published? And the second question is, how will you be encouraging us to participate with the book? Will you announce it and we should try and read that particular section before a talk?
Good question. It was published in 2005. And which is interesting because he didn't even come back to this country until 2002. So it must have already, I think it would already been in the works. He doesn't explain in this book, as he did for the other one, how it came about. But at any rate, 2005. Ideally, we would decide far in advance, and Savitri, our website manager, has been wanting us to decide far in advance what our titles are so that you can have them on the website for people to see. I think more than I have with other subjects, I'm probably going to try to decide these far in advance and coordinate with Dennis and Diane. We may end up teaching on the same things, but try to, especially at the beginning, offer a variety of teachings at the beginning so that it's, you know, kind of interesting, and then maybe delve into depth as we go. But I think what I'll try to do is decide well in advance what I'll be teaching about so that you can do some reading of your own in preparation for that. So I would probably won't try to do a whole chapter. There's only 10 of them. And they're pretty dense. I mean, there's a lot there. Not dense in hard to read, but dense in that if you try to read the whole thing, it's just a lot to take in, especially if you read the introduction and you understand the context. So I will do my best to say in advance what I'll be talking about and give maybe the central text that I'll be working from. So thanks for that question. Yeah, please.
I'm curious, is there, here's a renowned person who has done the translation, and to the degree that I suppose one does a translation, you end up possibly at least conveying a point of view, perhaps. Is there anyone else that is of high regard that has also done Pali translations and come up with different translations or different interpretations of certain things that create controversy or create differences of view on maybe heavy subjects?
Yeah, I'll give the few that I know. I'm not a scholar myself, so I'll ask for some help from some of you that have taken courses and things. The primary one that has the breadth, there's some fantastic translations of individual texts, but as far as the breadth of the prolific nature of the translations, the only one that comes to mind immediately is Tanasaro Bhikkhu, who's also sometimes called Tan Jeff. He lives in Southern California, and he has a website called Access to Insight that we have often recommended here that contains his translations, and often more than one version. He often has some of his mentors, Buddhist monk mentors, that he learned from. He'll have their translations as well. And it's really cool in Access to Insight, because he'll have his, and then right underneath the title, he'll have a click that you can go right over and read the other one. You know, not quite, well, I guess you could do it side by side if you open two windows, but they're both there. So in terms of the breadth of availability of probably every sutta that's in here would have a translation on Access to Insight, Tanasaro Bhikkhu is the main one I can think of. There's some fascinating, in terms of really alternative translations, there's some really fascinating translations coming out nowadays from some self-identified secular Buddhists that are quite different. The two that come to mind are Andrew Olensky, who was the head of the Barry Center for Buddhist Studies until just recently, and then the other one would be, John Peacock is another one that does some of those kind of translations, and then Stephen Batchelor are three that have done, in their mind, what they call secular Buddhist translations. And so because of that mindset would be quite different from both Tan Jeff and Bhikkhu Bodhi, who are quite orthodox Theravadan monks. Diane, Wendy, can you think of others? Other folks here, can you think of other?
I was just going to say Naoyo has done a lot. He was a student of Bhikkhu Bodhi.
Okay, in addition to the Satipatthana, what has he, what other?
He just completed two other volumes, one on the Brahmaviharas and his translation, and then on mindfulness of death.
Oh, okay, great. So those are organized thematically,
mm-hmm.
primarily?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He did the Dhammapada, and he did another rare, or old book, but I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah. The Atthagavada.
I think that's what
it is. The Atthagavada. Yeah, Gil Fransdahl. Yeah, Gil Fransdahl has just absolutely beautiful translation of the Dhammapada, which is kind of the most popular Buddhist text. There's lots of translations of it. Gil's is just spectacular, really wonderful. And then, yeah, as Wendy said, he just came out with a translation of the Atthagavada, which is part of the Sutta Nipata. It's just one section. The Book of Eights, it's called. But it's really a beautiful translation also of that. Barbara, you had?
No, I was going to say
Analia
also.
Analia, yeah. And he, by the way, is the person that took over at the Barry Center for Buddhist Studies as the director after Andrew Olensky. He's a German monk. Yes, Chris?
Are you starting next week? And if so, what's the topic?
Diane, are we starting next week? And if so, what's the topic?
No, we're not starting next week. I think we need to order the books so people can have time to read up on whatever topic. So I would imagine maybe not for a couple of weeks.
Yeah,
so
Laura's speaking on the 28th, mm-hmm. And she wasn't in on this decision, quite frankly. So I'm not expecting her to jump in and take up this subject.
Next week I am going to be using communal harmony as a basis for being authentic in everyday life.
Yeah, being authentic is the series that Diane is working on right now. And you've decided to do two?
I did one.
You did one. This will be the second. But then your next talk after that will be in the Buddha's Words series.
That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah. And my next talk, I can't remember when it is, but I think it's around July, about a month from now, we'll be here. So I'll try to get that title out as soon as I can. Yes?
So you're not going to go like the format of the book from the course to the...
No, we're not going to try to go sequentially.
Okay.
And then we will invite our guests speakers as we have them to work from this, and so we don't want to constrain anybody. But this is so broad that it basically has the whole Dhamma, but doesn't have all the suttas. So
people are going to jump around according to...
Yeah, I think they'll jump around, right. Whatever speaks to us in the moment. We wanted to get a theme that was broad enough that it would kind of be relevant as things come up, you know, either within the Sangha or in the greater world. So this is broad enough that we can do that. And it's broad enough that we can invite our presenters, like Heather Sundberg, you know. She could teach on anything she wants. When she comes here, she always contacts us in advance and says, what's your theme? I want to fit within that theme, you know. Really generous. So we'll probably tell her, well, this is the theme now, and she'll likely work from it.
But we would know ahead of time what the theme would be, so
yeah.
We could read up if we needed to.
Yeah, we'll do our best to let you know in advance.
Yeah. And probably for next week, I'll reference some area on Access Insight to read ahead of time.
Oh, okay. So those online that couldn't hear that comment, Diane said for her talk next week she will give a reference, since we won't have time to order the books by then, a reference on Access to Insight for the suttas that she'll be citing. Anybody else have experience with the book that they'd like to share? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you can listen to them as many times as you want, and it takes me about many times before this stuff gets. So,
yeah. After all, it's an oral tradition, so maybe listening would be another modality that several people want to try. So just to clarify, this particular little form I put is for the hard copy. It's also available in ebook format, you know, as a PDF, and you know, for your Kindle or your Nook or whatever. If you want to do that, that's fine too. And then, as Barbara said, it's available as an Audible, as a audiobook.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking about the Audible book. So to do that, I think you have to have the book. Also, because well, to search through it, have they arranged for that to be able to search through to go somewhere?
No, it's hard.
Yeah.
Audio book. Some of them are better than others. Sometimes you can see a chapter listing.
Right.
But I don't generally go searching. I just listen to them. You can do it, but not on a gross level. You probably can do it 10 sections. But
yeah.
Maybe if you had it. Like a copy of the table of contents or something, you know.
Yeah.
Then you could get a little closer and kind of flip to the pages or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you really think you're going to do a lot of searching, then you would get the ebook.
Yeah.
I think at Wisdom it's $13.99, so it's not a lot more. And they've got like three different formats. If you order it through Wisdom, they've got three different formats. If you order it through your favorite electronic publisher, you know, they may have a format for your e-reader or whatever. But those are really, those are infinitely searchable, right? You know, if you want to know how many times they use the word "the," you can figure that out. So, yes.
There's somebody was mentioning the library earlier. I'll just put a plug in for Sacramento Library. They have many of you may know this already, but they have an app that you can download ebooks and audiobooks straight to your phone. It's very convenient, and it takes the sting out of late fees, because when your book expires, it just disappears. It goes back to the cloud, and so you never have to return anything. So I found it. They have quite a few Buddhist titles, so I'd recommend you check that out.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah,
ask a favor. It's just a pedagogical thing, but if you, it would be great if you assume that we've done the reading and do the teaching, because I, speaking for myself, I will let it slide if I know that you're going to spend the first third of the talk going over it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
Assume that you've done the reading.
Yes, assume that we've done the reading.
Yeah. Well,
that'd be great.
Certainly if I've told you in advance to do reading, I would assume
okay.
that. Yeah. Tonight I did not, but thank you for that reminder. Any other requests, comments? Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah.
It really is. Like, I could just feel it driving here. You know, I'm excited to be talking about this. Cause we all, when we talked about it, the three of us at our last mentors meeting, Diane and Dennis and I, we were just like, yeah, this will be really fun. I hope you find it so as well. And I hope you find it beneficial for your practice. And that's the main thing. So. All right. Well, let's wrap up then with an acknowledgement that anytime we have the privilege really to spend time together like this, thinking about the Dhamma, discussing the Dhamma, or just being with good spiritual friends, it's just such an honor and a privilege, and it's also a benefit to all beings, whether we recognize that or not, whether we see it in this lifetime or not. Just inclining the mind toward these teachings and the benefit that they can bring to our lives and all of those around us is really a good thing to do. It's a beneficial way to spend our time. So just taking a moment to feel the goodness that happens when we spend our time wisely and dedicating whatever good may have come out of this evening to reducing or eliminating the suffering of all beings. May all beings be safe and protected. May all beings be peaceful and happy, healthy and strong. May all beings be free of suffering in this very life.